This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. Last week, we traveled to Craven Correctional Institution in Vanceboro to hear about the new Leash on Life program, where inmates are training shelter dogs for adoption. This week, we learn about Caledonia Correctional Institution's agricultural program, which continues to produce thousands of pounds of crops each year. Lee Jenkins has more on the self-sufficient prison farm in Halifax County and the impact it's had on the community.
The institution began as a state prison farm in the early 1890s. Over the years, it's expanded from a handful of wooden shacks on flooded farmland to a full-blown medium-security prison complex with its own cannery. The institution's never forgotten its roots, however. Farming is still a central part of the goings-on around the prison. As well as raising livestock, the prison boasts an impressive variety of crops. Prison Enterprises Director Philip Sykes.
We grow several crops that we can here to feed to the inmate population. We grow collards, turnips, sweet corn, depending on need, squash and sweet potatoes, soybeans, field corn, and we grow the daylilies for the Department of Transportation.
Most of the food grown on the 5,500-acre farm is preserved at the prison's cannery and distributed to other prisons throughout the state. On average, inmates can almost 6 million pounds of staple crops, corn, turnips, and collards per year. Other vegetables vary by acreage.
They drive tractors, plant, harvest, everything any farmer on the outside would do.
Farmers work in 8-hour shifts and are paid anything between 13 and 26 cents an hour. According to Sykes, raises and promotions are treated like they are outside of the prison.
It's based on their work ethic. It's really run just as any job there is. Somebody that deserves it will be moved up after they prove themselves for, I think, 30 days is what it is before you can give the step up.
Being a prison, there are some key differences. Lunch breaks tend to last longer, as the prisoners have to be accounted for and properly secured prior to returning to the field. They're also accompanied by one of 8 staff overseers.
Each supervisor will have a 10 to 15 man crew doing a specific project, so they're out there. If they're hand-picking squash or planting soybeans, the inmates will be out there and the supervisor will be there in the field with them.
Occasionally, the prison will have a surplus harvest. When that happens, the food is donated to the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina. Over the past 5 years, the prison has donated over 2 million pounds of food for needy and hungry people. Just this week, they sent in a shipment of sweet corn. Coordinator of Marketing and Public Affairs, Jennifer Caslin, says the prison's contributions are invaluable.
250,000 to 500,000 extra pounds a year is a lot of extra meals that are going out to people. And if we didn't have that, those extra meals would be missing, obviously, for those people. So it's very important.
120 of the over 500 prisoners work on the farm at any given time. Those that do are housed in a special cell block, more relaxed than the standard ones. During the off-season, they cultivate vegetables in one of the prison's greenhouses. Pictures of the prison farm can be found online at publicradioeast.org. I'm Lee Jenkins.
We can feel summer winding down. Students are savoring the last few weeks of vacation before school starts again. But some have already returned to practice and rehearse at summer band camp. Today we're at New Bern High School to hear how the Marching Bears prepare for a busy season. Over 100 band students stand motionless with their instruments in playing position, waiting for the metronome to start. As soon as the drum major has the tempo, she waves her hands and counts the band in. Most students are still, some march in place. Right now, the band is focusing on the music, so they play the same section again and again. Tyler Tuohy is a rising senior and the band's assistant drum major. He says being outside during the dog days of summer, from 8 in the morning to 6 in the evening, builds relationships.
It definitely makes us more of a family. From making us more of a family, we get to care more about each other. And then we just end up helping each other and pushing each other forward. So that's usually how it goes.
The Marching Bears are preparing for their performance during halftime shows at football games and at several competitions where they will compete against other high school bands across the state. This year, their show is called Framed in Black, and features the music of Pictures at an Exhibition and the Rolling Stones' Paint It Black. I see a red door and I want it painted black. New Bern High School's band director, Chris Elbing, says Bandcamp offers students more than just music skills.
The students are working together. They're developing a lot of lifelong relationships. They're learning how to work hard and push themselves. And they're learning a lot of skills that they're not getting on a typical day-to-day basis. They might not get in those math courses.
Campers learn a variety of marching techniques that allow them to move forward, backward, and laterally across the field. They also learn how to roll their feet so their instruments don't bounce.
It can be demanding on the younger kids, learning how to, it's almost like walking and talking at the same time. So we have a lot of staff that we bring in, also some student leaders step up and show the students and work with them and spend a lot of time.
Christina Hartle is the head drum major.
I mostly supervise over conducting the music and looking through the scores and make sure all the sections have their music dealt with.
Hartle works in tandem with assistant drum major Tui to make sure the show is ready for competition. In addition to conducting, directing, and leading, Hartle says they assume the role of a cheerleader.
We go on the field, and when we see someone slouching or their head is down, we're always the ones that go out there and pick them up because we know a lot of these students personally. If we don't, we get to know them through band camp, and that really helps them when you know them and something is going on in their life to help pick up their spirits and push through one more set.
What set marching bands apart from other bands is movement, as students create patterns with their bodies. Not on the grid is New Bern High School's band director, Chris Elbing. He's perched in a tower 30 feet above the practice field. From there, he can spot mistakes and correct them. The practice field is marked like a football field, with a painted line every 10 yards. The band students use these lines as position markers as they practice drill. At band camp, Elbing says they rehearse moving from one spot to the next over and over again.
It teaches muscle memory and just making sure that there's consistency. We know that perfection is not something that's necessarily realistic, but we always strive to make it as perfect as possible each time. And the students know each time that they get another second chance, they want to make it better.
While perfection isn't immediately rewarded, there are consequences for taking an extra step or two. Push-ups. And at band camp, there's lots and lots of push-ups. Elbing insists it's not really a punishment, it's more for focus and strength building.
People would actually be surprised that we do a lot of conditioning. We actually start the day off running a lap around the track. We do a lot of core exercises, crunches, planks, because we believe that having the kids conditioned makes them better musicians, and they actually do need to. They're athletic on the field.
Band camp isn't just about fun, it's also hard work. Elbing encourages the band students to drink plenty of water and to take breaks. On the sidelines, Neil Zagopoulos is resting.
Band camp, it's great. I mean, weather, it's great to me. Everybody else is like, oh, it's so hot. I mean, I'm out here, it's just like, man, this is amazing and everything.
He plays tenors, a series of four drums tuned to different pitches.
It's fun to play. Percussion has a lot of interesting parts to play, a lot of difficult parts to play, but we can get it.
Even as the week-long summer camp ends, the marching band will continue to rehearse their show when school returns, during band class, and after hours.
Typically the first or second performance, you won't see the entire thing. You might only see the first half, and then throughout the year, you'll see the entire production.
At band camp, the sunscreen-coated students are dressed in t-shirts, shorts, and hats. But during football games and competitions, the marching bears will be dressed in elaborate uniforms with ornate helmets with feathery plumes. This year, the band has more students than they've had in 5 years, so they're trying to raise money to buy more uniforms. Elbing says they've had to get creative to make up for the shortage of costumes.
It works out this year. We're going to use black chef's coats. They're going to be part of the show, but they also serve a dual purpose because we just don't have enough outfits for the kids, so in order for everybody to be uniform, that's what they're going to have to do.
In addition to performing at football games and competitions, the New Bern High School Marching Band entertains the community by performing in parades and at Christmas ceremonies. This year, Elbing planned performances at nursing homes in the area. For more information on the Marching Bears, go to newbernbands.com. Cape Fear Regional Theater in Fayetteville and the Hidden Voices Project are in the process of collecting stories from military spouses about finding courage in the challenges they face during and after deployment. The organizations hope to turn these stories into staged readings to help connect the military families with the greater community. Michael Peterson has more.
Dora Bullock lives in New Bern and remembers the struggles vividly she faced during her husband's deployment back in 2010.
He left about a week and a half before I gave birth to our daughter. So that was kind of tough, you know, not having him there during her first full 6 months of life. He was there through Skype online. He was able to see, you know, everything take place that way, but it still wasn't the same, and it made things a lot harder.
It's stories like this that Cape Fear Regional Theater and Hidden Voices are collecting. Tom Quaintance moved to Fayetteville 3 years ago when his wife started taking Mommy and Me classes with mostly military spouses. He says she would come home telling him the incredible stories she heard. That's when the light bulb went off for Quaintance, the artistic director of the Cape Fear Regional Theater.
The programming was not reflective enough of where we are. You know, it's a town that is largely thriving because of Bragg and the 82nd. So we've been looking for a project that we thought would be not only appealing to the military community, but reflective of what their lives are.
Over a year and a half ago, Quaintance attended a conference and happened to hear about the nonprofit project Hidden Voices. Its founder and director, Lyndon Harris, says the mission is to help military spouses share their stories. It's often a cathartic exercise beneficial for the spouse and for those hearing of their hardships.
We work with communities to help them share their stories, and we do that through performances, through different kinds of media, through touring exhibits, and through art.
Quaintance and the assistant director of Hidden Voices collaborated about how they could work together to collect stories of military spouses in eastern North Carolina.
So we wrote a grant to Theater Communications Group. They were doing a program called Audience Revolution about changing the way you do outreach to different parts of your community. And so we wrote a grant outlining that we wanted to do outreach by making this important part of our community a part of the art making.
The workshops were attended by people like Nikki Hart.
So the car breaks down, so now you've got to put on a mechanic's cap, and you've got to figure out how to fix the car or how to get it fixed. And then the next day, one of the kids, they're sick. Well, now you've put on the doctor's hat. Things that it may seem like everybody deals with that and it happens to everybody, but when your spouse is deployed and you share those responsibilities, especially emotional support, and it's not there for 9 months to a year, it takes a toll on you.
In order to facilitate the workshops and stage project, the Doris Duke grant was approved in January. Soon after, workshops were set up for veteran spouses and new military spouses. The conversations happened over coffee and pastries, while Hidden Voices helpers employed unique methods to get the participants to open up about their experiences. Quaintance says the goal is for deep, meaningful conversation on what life is like for them.
They start with a bunch of questions that get to the root of what's the best way that we can help? What are the things that people who are not in your situation need to know?
The workshops have spawned art projects. One installation depicts military life in the 1950s.
Really different lifestyle that was expected of military spouses, from when they had to serve tea, they had to dress a certain way, they were given a handbook, they weren't allowed to have jobs. Boxes will be on display with the performances.
The workshops have been going on since early this year, and this month they're hosting a workshop with a town hall style meeting at Cape Fear Regional Theater in Fayetteville. Quaintance says the theater will accept personal stories through the end of August. So far, they've collected over 100 stories.
We've been getting letters. We've had people come in and put stories on video. We've been taking emails.
They also take submissions by phone. Both organizations involved hope to have a completed theater project by May of 2015. For more information on this or to submit your story, go to cfrt.org. We provided a link for you at publicradioeast.org. I'm Michael Peterson.
Young and old alike enjoy scanning the beach looking for seashells, but a group of people called conchologists take that pastime to another level. Next week, hundreds of seashell enthusiasts from around the country will travel to Wilmington for the Conchologist of America convention, where they'll have a chance to see some of the rarest shells on Earth. Mac McKee speaks with co-chair for the event, Ed Schuller, about the convention and the hobby of collecting seashells.
Conchologist is a person who is interested in seashells. They range from, you know, just rank amateurs, which is what I was about 10 years ago, to professionals who are trained in marine biology and have worked in the field all of their working lives, which covers a wide spectrum.
Now, have you always been interested in the sea and coastal life?
I have been very interested in the sea for most of my life, yes, but I only recently became interested in the details of coastal life.
Now, how long have you been a member of the North Carolina Seashell Club, Ed?
I've been a member since the year 2000.
Is there only one chapter in the state of North Carolina?
There is today only one chapter. Probably the majority of our members come from the coastal area, but we have a lot of them from all over the state, and believe it or not, a number from out of the state. We have some regular attendees at our meetings that come as far as from Maryland and occasionally Pennsylvania.
Ed, what is the best time of year to go hunting for seashells along the North Carolina coast?
Well, generally speaking, it's when people are not on the beach. Wintertime, you could expect to be the best. Islands that are not readily accessible by the public are generally pretty good. Storms sometimes can bring up a good bit of material. Usually there'll be a delay of 2 or 3 or 4 days before that material will start coming up on beaches, but they can be profitable also.
So basically these rainy days or Tropical Storm Bertha have made seashell hunting more worthwhile then?
It's possible it could. It's dependent somewhat on direction of the waves that it creates. Yeah, potentially a storm could be a good source of seashells on the beach.
The Conchologist of America is holding their first ever national organization of seashell clubs at the Hilton Riverside in Wilmington. Now, as co-chair of this event, Ed, this event also is the first convention of its kind to be held in the state of North Carolina. What are some of the highlights?
We start out with a number of tours around Wilmington to show our guests, most of which are coming from out of state. And the program itself actually begin next Monday. We have 3 days of scientific and general interest programs, silent auctions going on all weeks in which you can pick up some really good bargains in shells. We have a lot going on. At the end of the week, Thursday and Friday of next week, we will have vendors from all over the world in the Hilton in both ballrooms, and they'll be spreading out their shells. They are offering for sale, but they certainly are a spectacle just to go in and look at, see shells that you would have never seen before, and lots of them.
Now, is there still time to register for the convention, and what are the dates?
Well, it's getting pretty tight, but we do have daily registration rates of $40, and that would allow you to go in, hear the programs that day, participate in the auctions and anything else that's going on at that time.
The Conchologist of America Annual Convention and Seashell Market will take place next week. For more information, go to publicradioeast.org and click on ENC Events. The Downeast Journal is made possible by our Public Radio East members in partnership with Carteret General Hospital, announcing an educational session with Dr. Thomas Bates on the Makoplasty robotic arm technology for knee resurfacing and hip replacements, Thursday, August 14th at 6 p.m. RSVP at 808-6200. Carteret General Hospital.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal.
We have reached that tomato disease time of year, and I'm getting lots of calls from people whose tomato plants are dying. So I thought, let's have some fun with tomato diseases. I'm going to give you something you can do right in your own kitchen to help you diagnose one tomato disease. The disease is bacterial wilt. It's a disease of tomato and pepper and tobacco, also zinnias, geraniums, sunflowers, and marigolds. But let's get back to tomatoes. So, the most obvious symptom of bacterial wilt is wilting that begins on only one side of the plant. This disease progresses quickly, so you have to really watch to see this particular symptom. After one side of the plant wilts, you have a sudden collapse of the entire plant. What happens is that the bacteria plug up all of the vascular tissue, the tubes that bring water up from the soil to the leaves. Once infected, plants will always die from bacterial wilt. So if you've seen the symptoms in one plant that has died, and you're starting to see symptoms in another, here's a way to test. First, cut open a portion of the stem and look at the color. Inside a healthy tomato plant, the vascular tissue will be green, maybe yellowish, a little bit white. Inside a plant infected with bacterial wilt, the stem will be tan to yellow-brown. And as the pathogen moves up the stem and progresses, the vascular tissue will become deep brown. All right, so you've cut open a piece of the stem, and you see that it is turning brown inside. Here's the really fun part, where we do a little science in the kitchen. Cut across the stem and set it in a glass of water. Don't disturb the water, and just leave it there sitting for a few minutes. Now go back and hold it up to the light. You should be able to see thin, milky lines of bacteria streaming out of the cut stem. Now, wasn't that fun? It's not so much fun if you do find you've had bacterial wilt. Bacterial wilt can actually survive in soils for years without even a host plant present. So land where you've had infected plants really shouldn't be planted again to tomatoes or any other susceptible plant for quite some time. This is more than just the standard plant rotation we talk about, where you don't grow the same type of plant in the same time year after year. This can be a more serious disease that takes longer to clear out. So if you've got some wilting tomato plants in your yard and you feel like being a home scientist, do a bacterial streaming test and see what you can find. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
Today, we say goodbye to one of the voices you've heard regularly on the Down East Journal. Lee Jenkins will be leaving for college soon to further his broadcasting education. Lee is here in the studio with me. You've been with Public Radio East for two summers now, and you've produced many features that have aired on Down East Journal. What are some of the things that you've learned during your time here?
Well, I've definitely learned a lot about, you know, how to write the features in the first place. I think that was something that was wholly new to me. I've never written anything like that before. I also learned a lot about sound editing, which, again, something alien to me before I came here, and just a lot about, you know, professionalism on the air and all that sort of stuff.
So you'll be attending Elon University this fall. What are you studying, and how do you plan on using what you've learned here?
I'm going to be hoping to be a communications major. I'm already in their fellows program, assuming I turn my bio in on time. And it's nice to have a lot of, you know, practical, real-world experience going in, so you can sort of see how all the educational, historical pieces fit into the real world type thing.
Now, you have a couple weeks before the first day of school. Do you have any plans or anything you want to do before you hit the books?
I am actually going to be attending a tea party this weekend, you know, tea, crumpets, all that stuff, with some of my old friends from high school. It's sort of our one last hurrah before we all go our separate ways. I don't think any of us are actually going to the same university.
Well, Lee, thank you so much for all your hard work this summer, and we wish you luck, and we're going to really miss you.
Well, thank you. I'm going to miss you guys, too.
At Public Radio East, we're always interested in helping develop young local talent. If you're a junior, rising senior, or college student intent on pursuing a career in broadcasting, let us know. Send us some information about yourself, your career goals, and if you have it, a sample of your work. You can reach us at our website, publicradioeast.org. Thanks for listening to the Downeast Journal. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for features you'd like to hear, you can drop us a line at publicradioeast.org. Have a great weekend.